Song Dynasty, exploring the history and charm of one of China's most fascinating dynasties. Episode 14, Putting the People at the Heart of Their Art. In this podcast, we're getting down and dirty with the art of the Song, how it started with a desire to catalogue the wonders of the natural world that they saw about them, and then evolved into a fascination with the minutiae of existence. I'm Bob Jones, and in this Why We Love the Song Dynasty podcast, I'm throwing the spotlight on what was to become one of China's most iconic dynasties in the country's long and colourful history. We know from our journey so far that the emperors of the Song Dynasty prided themselves on being intellectual and sophisticated, ultimately at the expense of statecraft, leading to their decline and downfall. It was also a time of comparative wealth and peace, which made Song society quite a nice place to live. The top-down nature of Confucianism meant that the emperor's interests became the interests of all. Emperors would be trained in the arts and also the appreciation of art. They saw it as their civic duty to patronize the arts both physically and financially. That attitude permeated down to the court, officials, and all the way down to almost every level of society. Emperor Huizong was actually perhaps the greatest collector of paintings during the Song period. It is said that his collection consisted of almost 6,400 paintings by 231 artists, of which he was one. He also gave it a more official standing by insisting that painters had to pass exams, similar to those that had been set up for those who wanted to enter the civil service. In short, it was a great place for the arts to flourish. There was also a growing appreciation of nature, which brought with it a desire to understand antiquity and all that went before. It was seen philosophically as essential to know where you came from. We are growing individuals, learning, adapting, bettering ourselves. We once were seeds. We will flower and bloom. We will send forth new generations. Our place in nature was also crucial to the Song, and so many of the artists working during the Song Dynasty infused their works with not only an appreciation of the natural world, but also an emotional attempt to understand what it all means. They could not paint a mountain, for example, without attempting to explain the meaning of the mountain. A tree was not just a tree, but represented something more widely in society. So, how did our Song painters achieve this feat of expression? For the artist Zhao Mengfu, it was all about understanding the meaning and value of an object. He was a descendant of the imperial clan of the Song dynasty, and indeed outlived the dynasty to serve under the regime that destroyed it, working as an official to the detriment of his later reputation. Crucially, he was a master of calligraphy as well as painting. He believed that art was not meant to imitate reality and express the existence of objects alone. No, it was actually a means of describing objects and their nature. He would often accompany his artworks with a poem supporting its interpretation or spirit. Calligraphic techniques ended up in paintings to give actual meaning to things or figures, for example, by using the same kinds of basic strokes you find in writing: left falling stroke, right falling stroke, and horizontal turning. Calligraphy places its stress on the flavor and quality of Chinese characters. But these techniques could easily be transferred to painting to add meaning. You'd be mistaken for thinking that because traditional Chinese painting relied on the simplicity of materials and technique, that it was in some way inferior to paintings produced in Europe at the time. The Europeans were getting into oil on canvas and experimentations in color. In China, just as in calligraphy, brushes are dipped in black ink and then applied to paper and silk especially. They used two main styles, either a meticulous detailed brushstroke or a broader watercolor style known as xie yi or freehand style. There were six principles laid down by a scholar, Xie He, in the 5th century. There had to be spirit resonance, a flow of energy in the picture. Use of the bone method. This was how your personality shone through. Correspondence to the object, whether things looked as they should. Suitability to type. Attention to color, layers, value and tone. Division and planning, which was all about composition. And transmission by copying. There was a heavy emphasis on doing things correctly and following the techniques of the masters down to the tiniest stroke. Just look at some of the paintings from the period, with their dramatic mountains sometimes shrouded in mist, stunning rocks and rivers, and delicate arboreal scenes in the foreground, and it's easy to see why the Song Dynasty became known as the Great Age of Chinese Landscape Painting. Just as there were four masters of calligraphy, there were also four great painters of the Southern Song, namely Li Tang, Liu Songyan, Ma Yuan, and Xia Gui. Of them all, it was Li Tang who straddled the two parts of the dynasty, the Northern and Southern, who best perhaps exemplified the changing face of painting styles which came with the flight of the dynasty from Kaifeng to Hangzhou. We'll examine that shift in a moment, but for now, let's stick with Li Tang. Li Tang loved drawing mountains, rivers, people, birds, and other animals. Working in ink and wash, a calligraphic style, his works expressed that concept we mentioned earlier of bringing out the nature of an object in the style in which it was painted. The change, when it came, saw an attention to detail, a focus. This was the way the Song mentality in general was developing. Hunting for the essence of an object, its true nature. In some respects, this was similar to Romanticism in Europe. It was a discovery of the past and its replication and veneration in the present. Hence the Song passion for antiquity, collecting and recreation. If there were ever people in Song paintings, they tended to represent historical figures and stories, political conflicts, the lives of nobles and religious texts. Tastes and styles change, and nowhere more so than during the Song Dynasty, which, as we mentioned in an earlier podcast, was divided neatly into two parts. Style was influenced by how the dynasty felt at the time. Basically, the Northern Song favoured panoramic paintings of landscapes. The later Southern Song tended to focus in on small details. Northern Song landscapes were big and grand, with attention to accuracy, whereas Southern Song paintings reflected human temperament and artistic spirit, and a personal rather than societal expression and an understanding of the world. Let's use our telescope for a moment and look in the direction of Europe. Leonardo da Vinci was still 150 years away. Just surfing the end of the Song period was the artist Giotto, who was moving away from the old rules and expectations of painting, which was heavily influenced by religion. He was starting to try to capture beauty and truthfulness as perceived through the eyes of people rather than the church. There are parallels with the work of the Italian writer Dante, and together they heralded the arrival of the Renaissance, which, as we have suggested before, might have had some of its roots in the rich garden of Song Dynasty culture. Let's get back to the Song Dynasty, where Chinese painter Zhao Mengfu was busy breaking down the barriers between painting, nature, the way humanity saw itself and natural phenomena. He saw humanity as part of the great poetry of existence. He wasn't painting a fixed state, but rather a snapshot of a changing world and the role of mankind in that change. For those of us who were brought up in the West, it's very dangerous, though, to appreciate or judge Chinese art. Art appreciation today is very much based on a Western view and traditions. We can talk about parallels between European and Chinese artistic movements, but we shouldn't see them as comparable. Of course, it's important, thought-provoking, or even entertaining to look at Sung painting in an academic way. But the basic truth is, they are beautiful paintings in so many ways. Breathtaking in their detail and observations of nature, and profoundly emotional in their execution. There are many aspects of Sung culture and life that would be easily recognizable in Chinese society today. What the Sung achieved, developed or triggered off, has had ripples throughout subsequent Chinese history. So, why not be like the people of the Sung dynasty and mindfully drink in their beautiful works of art? Special thanks go out to San Lien Zhongdu for their help in creating the content for this show. This is Bob Jones. Thanks for listening. Join me again next time. This has been a China Plus podcast. If you like the show, please give us a rating and be sure to subscribe wherever you listen. If you've got any questions or feedback, please feel free to contact us via email at podcast@cri.com.cn or find us on Twitter, China Plus Pods.